Over here says that am I not one father mechuban? How about kel lechad? There are one God has created us. Madua nivgad ish biachiv. Why is one man rebelled against his brother? Lechalul bris avasin, to profane the bris of our forefathers.
Wait a second. So what happened?
Page 880, pasuk yud. Perek beis pasuk yud. Malachi is giving Musa to Klal Yisrael, telling them that why are we fighting with each other? Haloi of Echam Bukhulad, we have one father.
It's a question,
a rhetorical question. Don't we have one father? Why are we fighting? We all come from the same, we're all brothers. Haloi Kelecha Barada. So we spent a lot of time on Friday discussing this. In the first part of the pasuk is telling us that we are physically similar. We're physically the same. Number two, we are spiritually the same. We all have been acquired from the same spiritual source. Therefore, Madua Nivkat Ishbiach, why then should one man rebel and commit a crime against his fellow man? According to the Mitzvah Stad, when it says the word Biachid, it really refers to a person's wife. Why are you then unfaithful to your wife? And as he explained that when they came back from Babel, their wives were not as beautiful as they were when they got married. They married their wives in Babel, and then when they came back to Eretz Yisrael, because of the stress of the road, their wives were not beautiful in their eyes, so they took for themselves non-Jewish women in Eretz Yisrael, in addition to remaining married to their wives. So this was considered to be a begida. When a man is unfaithful to his wife, the term that is commonly used in Tanakh and Chazal is the word boigeit. But there's a Gemara, in fact, in Arabic we call it Gemara. I don't know what the Gemara is, maybe it's in Moed Katan. I think it's in Moed Katan. I remember the Reisman gave a very fascinating shiur about this, about printers' mistakes or printers' errors. The Gemara there relates a story where a man, he was obsessed with a woman. He wanted very much to marry a woman. He really liked this girl. He was dating her, and the girl did not want him. So the mark, and this person, he was mispalel very, very hard that Hashem should help him conquer her, that she should want to marry him. And he was mispalel. And I don't know who it was. One of the Amoraim told him, "Don't do that. It's not a good idea to be mispalel too much, regarding a specific shirah." It's specific, you need siyat and shmaya to get married, obviously. But if you are dating a woman, or a woman is dating a man, and they don't want, they say no, and you try again, and you do your shtalos many times. You can try to persuade the other person to want you for different reasons, but you try, and after everything's said and done, the person says no. Loi mitan alf, I don't want you. And this person did not want to take no for an answer, so he resorted to Hashem. And he was mispalel, and Amora took an observer, was taking place, and he told him, don't do this, because it may not work out, and you will come to be boigeid ba. Boigeid, the word boy, that exact same word ba. Now what does that mean? Boigeid ba. So there are two girsois. There's a girso that says beis hey ba, and then there's a girs that says beis hey with an apostrophe. Beis hey
Hashem.
So that's the question. What is the correct girsa? Is the girsa boher or is the girsa Bahashem? That's where the printer comes in. Did the printer leave out the strechel, the apostrophe, or did the printer insert the apostrophe? What is the real girsa? And there's a theological hashkafik nafkamina. What is between the two? If the correct girsa is without the apostrophe, without the apostrophe, so what it means is if you dive in too hard, Hashem will give it to you. You will get her. But the reason why Hashem was preventing it until now from happening is because Hashem knows it's not in your best interest. Mm-hmm. Hashem knows the future, and Hashem knows that if He will work it out that she will want to marry you, years later, it's going to be a nasty, nasty divorce.
That's the popular saying, be careful what you wish for, you might get it.
Or you might get it. So therefore, Shema, and here is the point of which I want to tell you this Gemara is, because the Gemara used exactly this term, boigeid. Shema, boigeid bo. This Amoira, the Amoira told this person, don't do that. You've dated her. you tried, you were davened, and you tried to give everything in your power, you did all of your hishtadlus. And Shidduchim has a different set of rules than other things in life. And after the end of the day, she doesn't want, after all the hishtadlus, you know something? You have to have faith in Hashem that it's not for your good. Hashem is protecting you from yourself. Because if you're going to go and if you're going to continue davening more and more and more and more, Hashem might give in. Hashem will work it out. We'll make it work out that you will marry her. And then what's going to happen is, years later, it's going to become clear that it was really not in your best interest in the situation. And you will come to be boygeid bo, her. They say means her. You will do something horrible to her, which will set off a nasty, ugly situation. Obviously, that's not going to be in anyone's best interest. On the other hand, there's another gears. And the other gears is boygeid, base hey, apostrophe, bahashem, meaning Hashem's not going to give her to you no matter what. You can pray all you want. You're just going to have heartache. If she does not want, and it has not worked out, but you davening to Hashem with b'kol koichoi, it's not going to make one bit of a difference. Shidduchim have a different set of rules. Maybe when it comes to money, comes to power, comes to other things that that's not shidduchim, maybe there you can say that if you daven hard enough, Hashem will give it to you. But shidduchim have a different rule. So what's going to happen? You're going to daven, Hashem's not going to answer you, and then you're going to rebel against Hashem. It's not meant to be. So this is a hashkafic. This is the difference between one little teeny apostrophe is the difference in the most fundamental principles of tefillah and shidduchim. If the gear is, what's the gear? Shema, boygeid, is it ba, her, or Shema boygeid ba Hashem?
Well, if I may, another possible interpretation would be that you may be boygeid Hashem. In other words, Hashem will answer you, okay, and he'll give you the
what you want.
But eventually,
you'll have complaints against
you're
Hashem.
You're going to be boygeid Hashem because, you'll be signing as chaveira or something.
All right, like that's a different kind. I didn't hear of shot. It's a different approach. Okay, but Verizon, he said that's the nafkamina between the apostrophe. The apostrophe, if you put the apostrophe there, Bahashem, and that basically means Hashem will give it to you. If you daven hard enough, Hashem will give you whatever you want. But Hashem is trying to tell you, don't daven for this, because it's not in your best interest. It was Ba means her. Means Hashem will give her to you. Hashem will help you succeed. But Hashem is trying to tell you it's not in your best interest. Ultimately, I'm going to give it to you, but things are not going to work out the way you expected. And then you're going to have a very ugly fight with her. But if you have the apostrophe, it means Hashem's not going to give her to you no matter what. Shidduchim have a different set of rules. Shidduchim abashert. If this woman is meant to be for someone else, not meant for you, you can break your head open. It's not going to make a difference. Hashem will not give her to you. And then you're going to be extremely disappointed that after your investment of davening, Hashem did not listen to you, and you're going to come to rebel against Hashem. Don't set yourself up for heartache. A very big nafkamina. Again, the reason why I'm telling you this vort is because you see in that Gemara the word boygeid is a term, at least according to the first interpretation, is boygeid bo. Boygeid is very commonly used in Chazal and in Tanakh as an expression where of betrayal between ish with ishtai.
Also in Chumash.
Vigdoi bo, that's by an omohor of Rish, who's married her. You can't, bevigdoi bo, what the law is of a person as an omohor of Riyah. The halach is he himself, the master, should marry her, or he should give her in marriage to his son. And if he says, no, she's not good enough, there are better girls on the market, you have betrayed her. That's called the begida. Again, the same term is used in reference between matters of man and woman. Between man and woman, this is a reserved term a reserved expression, the word Megiddo, and that's why the Mitzudas Tavit over here is telling us, even though here it says word Ish Be'achiv, does not say the word Ish Be'ishtoi, you would expect, if we're really discussing man and a woman, you would expect her to say, Madua Nivgad Ish Be'ishtoi. Isn't that what the Mitzudas Tavit says? We're dealing with a situation where a man, he married a woman, they come to Eretz Yisrael, and the man says, you know, you're not as pretty as you were when we got married. When he hangs up the wedding picture in the house, that's not what you look like when we got married. So what's going on? So he goes and he takes a second wife. And that's called the Begida. So let the Pasuk say Let the Pasuk Ish be Ishtoi. It's a good question. So the Mitzudas Tavit just, you know, don't hack me on TikTok.
Maybe this is her father.
Because you want to say that when you're saying a very deep idea. You're saying a very deep idea that when a person is betrays his wife, he's betraying her father-in-law. His father-in-law. Shriga. But now the mayor is going to ask the question, what about the Shriga? That's not a betrayal. She got what she deserves. That's what mayor would say, okay. Yeah. Ish be'achiv lechalel bris avaseinu. Bogda Yehuda. This even next pasuk. You just review a little bit of here. Bogda pasuk Yudam page 880, ABC, right? Is that the
CBS?
I haven't listened in years already to radio. I used to listen every day. But Bogda Yehuda. Bogda Yehuda. This way even nessus of the Israel. Yehuda has rebelled. An abomination has occurred amongst the Jewish people. Uvirushalayim, he chilel Yehuda. Yehuda has profaned the Kodesh Hashem, Asher Ohev, the Holy One of Hashem that Hashem loves, referring to that the Yehuda has profaned themselves, I guess. He chilel Yehuda Kodesh Hashem Asher Ohev uvoal and has relations with a bas el nechar, a non-Jewish woman. These are metaphors, obviously, for that we have abandoned Hashem for Avodah Zarah. And that's a little bit strange because this is Malachi. And Malachi is discussing the Bayis Sheni. And in the Bayis Sheni, there is no Avodah Zarah. Okay, the Bayis Rishon, the problem was Avodah Zarah. We have a tradition. Okay, sorry, what's going on over here?
Is there a drone?
Someone's listening to you.
But we have in the Bayis Sheni, now you have to analyze exactly what point in time did this happen, but it seems towards the very beginning that the Anshei Knesset HaGadola canceled the Avodah Zarah, the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. Typically, 99.9% of the time when the Torah makes mention of metaphors like this, where the Jewish people were Baal, they were Baal Bas El Nechar, It refers to Gilei Arayos. It refers to the Jewish. It refers to Avodah Zarah.
Yeah, usually in terms of unfaithfulness, infidelity, or for
Avodah Zarah. That's always in the Isha. This type of thing, Baal Bas El Nechar, is like typically Avodah Zarah. But Malachi is speaking, and he's speaking to his generation. There was no Avodah Zarah. This was the era when Avodah Zarah came to an end, the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah came to an end. Because we have to see, we can do the only thing we did in this pasuk yet. Pasuk Yud Beis, Yachris Hashem lo ish asher yasen ha'er v'oideh. So the mention of this, and Hashem cut down a man that does this. Does it smell from fire here? My imagination? Some rubber burning?
Cleaning fluid.
Okay. Yachris Hashem, also the air conditioner is not on. Something wrong with the air conditioner? Is it warm here? It's fine here? It's good? Okay, good, fine. I'm just Yachreis Hashem. No, it's fine. And I'm even coming from the outside. I'm not gonna have an accurate sense of what the temperature should be. Yachreis Hashem leish asher yasena er ve'oina me'ohol Yaakov. Now I'm assuming over here is that we'll see in a few moments the precise translation. But Hashem shall cut down anyone that does this. Does what? Is Boal and Bas El Nechar? May Hashem cut them down. When it says Er V'yoyneh, that's going back on the word Yachres. It's very common, where the words have to be translated out of order. As if the pasuk says Yachres Hashem Er V'yoyneh, Hashem should cut down from a, let's say Lo'ish Er V'yoyneh. May Hashem cut down from any man that does this his children. His children are his Er V'yoyneh, means awake and one who responds. It's an expression meaning his descendants. As Reb Chol told us, there's obviously a play on the words in reference to Er ve'oinon. Yehuda, he married Bas Ish, he married a woman, he went away from his brothers in the aftermath of Mechiras Yosef. He went at Ish Adulami, he married this woman Shua, Bas Shua, and he had with her three children, Er, Onan, and Shelah. And Er and Onan, the Er married Tamar, and Er said, Vayar, he didn't want to allow her to become pregnant. So he was Mashkes Zera, and he died. Onan did the same thing, he also died. Tamar then wanted to marry the third child, Shelah, and Yehuda said, no, she is a Katlonis. A Katlonis, a woman that's married twice, and both of her husbands die, she has a chazaka of causing the death of her husband. This is not so simple in Bizman Hazeh. This halacha is a very complicated halacha. If a woman was already married twice, and both marriages ended in the husband dying, okay? I mean, it could happen now. I mean, this is not unheard of, such a thing. So there's a real halakhic question if this woman is allowed, if a person is allowed to marry her. It's a chazaka twice, it's a chazaka three times. It's a big machlok, it's a machlok, it's a chazaka is twice or three times. And when it comes to marriage, maybe marriage has a different set of rules. Look at Er and Onan and Shelah. So it's not unheard of these questions. Let's say the woman got divorced twice. The husband did not die, but these are all very complicated questions, and it's really a very painful type of question to deal with. And here it says, here it's interesting that here it uses that terminology, or Mechol made this point, which is very, very interesting. Er v'oineh, that's the sharish of the two sons of Yehuda, Er and Oinon. And here is Hashem is going to cut down from this man his descendants. And the descendants here are described by the same names as Yehuda's descendants. Er v'oineh, Er and Oinon. And the pasuk has to be read out of order. Yachres Hashem lo ish. May Hashem will cut off from this man his children that were calling Er and Oneh because Asher Ya'asena, because he has committed this crime of being Boal Abbas El Necha, which would seem to mean he engaged in Avodah Zarah, but also in this context it seems like he's discussing marrying a non and taking a second wife. This man is married to a woman and he has from her children. And then for Taiva, he comes to Eretz Yisrael, and his wife is not pretty enough, so he takes for himself a second wife, a trophy wife. That's what it's called, a trophy wife. He takes another woman, and this woman that he takes for her is a shiksa. She's not a Jewish woman. So the pasuk says it's a terrible aver. Number one, it's an aver that you're not going to marry a non-Jewish woman. Number two, how does your wife feel about this? The wife that gave you children, the mother of your children. What kind of chutzpah? What kind of Begida is this to her, just because she's not beautiful in your eyes, that you should go and betray her by taking another woman? By doing this, you will suffer the consequences, and your children that you have from her will die. Okay, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, if someone like us to say something like this, they would shut you down. But the pasuk says this. The pasuk over here says exactly this. Yachris Hashem le'ish, er ve'oineh. I'm sorry. Okay, we'll see them.
I made a mistake.
Rav Kalman said it. Rav Kalman made an incredible observation. Here we're talking about your descendants. There are two over here. We're describing a person's children with very unusual terms. Heir means someone who is awake. Oine means a person who answers, a person who is awake and has what to say. You know,
on the page, you're going to say that.
Right. Now, like you know, that's the sign of life. If a person is a leader and he's not to be seen, he's sleeping, and he has nothing to say, that's a problem. A leader is a person who does his job, is awake at the switch. You're awake, and when there's a problem, you have a... You know, you address the people. You tell them, you respond. You're oine. You answer. You reply. If a person is not awake and is sleeping, he doesn't exist. So we're dealing over here with real people that you can say are Er and oine. And Hashem over here is giving a klala that this person's children that are described with terms of life, life is defined with the word er and oiner, they will cease to exist as a punishment for him, this man, engaging in this terrible avera of marrying a non-Jewish woman at the expense of his wife. It's one thing to go and be a bal taiva and to marry a non-Jewish woman, but it's another thing when your taiva is a painful act of abandonment and of treachery to someone else. If you want to be a bal taiva, fine, be a bal taiva, but not at someone else's expense. This man, he committed himself to his wife, and now by taking another wife, he has betrayal. That's the key word. It's a betrayal, and that there is no excuse. And if we
to the parasha,
Eishes this parasha, Eishes Yifas Toyar. Very good questions. Eishes Yifas Toyar. So the question is, the person here married. Yes, a very good question. Eishes Yifas Toyar. So is that a betrayal to his the person who the soldier went to war? Is he married already? The Torah doesn't prohibit. This is an age old question. The Torah does not prohibit polygamy. The Torah permits a man to marry to more than one wife. Yaakov Avinu had four wives, and we know the Mishnayos discussed this at great length at Tzoreis. Masechta Yevamos, the whole Masechta Yevamos from beginning to end, a man is married to one wife, two wives, three wives, and Yibam. So you get the impression when you read the Torah and you learn it in the Mishnayos that polygamy, it's a normal thing that was done in Judaism from time immemorial. Historians, this is a big, big topic of discussion, have basically, so I've read, I don't know if I'm saying is correct.
But isn't the second marriage a disrespect for the first marriage automatically?
Well, that's why it's called a tzara. Why is a second wife is called a tzara in the Mishnayos? If a man has two wives, they're called, the term is tzaras. Why are they called tzaras?
Rivals.
They're rivals. That's a horrible term. Each one is fighting for the attention of her husband. It's a terrible term. So why would the Torah even allow it? Why would the Torah allow a man to enter into a situation where the whole definition of the marriage with the second wife is painful to the first wife? The Torah, Dirachela, Dirachecha Darchei Noam, the Torah says. Dirachecha Darchei Noam, V'ahavta L'Re'acha Kamocha. If it was the other way around, if a woman could take more than one husband, would he like it? Think about that. If a woman was allowed to take more than one husband, how would the husband feel? Who's going to feed me dinner tonight? Each wife will say, let the other one give you dinner. Don't bother me. Let the other one. A husband, a man, would not be very happy if his wife was permitted to take more than one husband. So why then is it any different? The Torah permits a man to marry more than one wife. That's clear as day, it's permitted. All the Masechta Yevamos, from beginning to end, works with that principle. Yaakov Avinu married four wives. The only thing you can't do is take two sisters. It's a good kasha. I don't have an answer. But one thing is, you get the impression that it was always done. Historians seem to indicate that it's not true. It was extremely, extremely rare. It was almost never done. It was almost never that. Oh, you'll say, what about Cherim Rabbeinu Gershon? Okay, that was almost 1,000 years ago. Cherim Rabbeinu Gershon. So they say, Cherim Rabbeinu Gershon was, this is what I've read, and if it's true or not, I don't know. People will probably shout me down, it's not true, but this is what I've read from the historical perspective. It was never done. Not by Ashkenazim, not by Sardin. It was frowned upon. It is not, even though it's permitted technically, because of whatever, there are certain situations where, whatever the situation is, it's necessary. But it's not something you do. You don't go cause another person pain by taking a second wife. This, by definition, is an act of betrayal. And the Torah says, V'ahavta l're'acha kamecha, the ikar friend in your life is your wife. It is the ultimate, the Torah permits it. Yeah, the Torah permits you to do a lot of things. There are a lot of things you can do. But you would be a novel Bereshus HaTorah. And in fact, the Torah discourages you to do this by the fact that Chazal call a second wife a tzara. So if you want to go create in this world tzaras, you're an avarian to do such a thing. The very fact that the Torah defines a second wife, calls two wives tzaras, is a statement by Chazal, don't you ever dare do this. The reason why then does the Torah permit this to be done? There are reasons. There are certain exceptional circumstances where it may be necessary, and the Torah permits it. But just because the Torah... What? So why the narrative... Right, so yeah, every situation is in this. Panina, Haftar, from the first of Rosh Hashanah, Chana, with the Tzara, the very term. But historically speaking, it appears, this is what the historians say, it was never ever done. It was considered to be an act of betrayal. The Torah allows it in unique circumstances. Chazal called them tzorais to set the tone. You shouldn't dare do this. It came a point in time in history where people's moral standing was severely eroded. And people were about to start doing this, like the goyim do this. They don't care. They'll just take advantage. If you have power, it'll take a couple of wives. What do they care? The Torah allows it. They don't care. So Rabbeinu Gershon nipped it in the bud. It's not the pshat that until Rabbeinu Gershon, everyone had a couple of wives. You know, like the Muslims, you have 10 wives.
No,
everyone
they usually have, I think they have a four limit.
A four limit?
Yeah.
I'm sure they could find a dispensation to get another four.
Those are not wives.
Okay.
I thought when you said, what is Beis Yaakov, there was some Iranian girls there. So there's one Iranian girl that her grandfather had two wives.
Had two wives, but there are exceptional circumstances.
Yeah, so it's not that long ago. I mean,
right, so there are the Sfardim somehow, you have to know what was the story, I don't know, but generally speaking.
The Sfardim lived in a culture where the Muslims dominated and Muslims.
It affected them. So who says there was a...
In Christian countries, they didn't have polygamy, at least officially.
He followed the Minhag HaMedina. What the Goyim do, the Jews do. If the Goyim marry more than one wife, so often the Torah permits it, so we'll also do it. And if the Torah does not permit it, so we'll find the Heta. We'll find the legal loophole. Unfortunately, that's the reality. We're very influenced by what the Goyim do, and we try to copy the Goyim. This is an unfortunate fact of the Torah. But according to what I understand, it was never promoted such a thing. That's why it's called the Tzoros, Chazal is setting the tone. Rabbeinu Gershon, yes, the average Yeshiva Bacher, tell him about Rabbeinu Gershon. They'll tell you, until Rabbeinu Gershon, everyone read each other's mail. It was, you know, that's the way of the world. The mailman knew everyone's business. The reason why why does the mail come in the afternoon? Because the mailman's busy the whole morning reading everyone's mail. So he doesn't read the mail until 1 o'clock, because it takes me time to go through everyone's mail to see what's going on in the world. Right? Right? Along came Rabbeinu Gershon and said, I want my mail 9 o'clock. I want my mail 9 o'clock. A chayim, a curse on anyone who reads someone else's mail. So it's a change from 12 o'clock to 9 o'clock. Women, people were married, was rampant. The whole world, everyone had a competition. How could I have more wives? And the long game of Rabbeinu Gershon, chayim, if you have more than one wife. It's a sheker. That's not the way it was. No one ever had more than one wife. Never. It was considered to be betrayal. No one had more than one wife. No one read anyone's mail. Rabbeinu Gershon saw Nisgagnu Haveros. People were beginning to crack. They were beginning to become influenced by the Goyim. The Goyim do this, so we'll also do it. Don't tell me about Sarai's ethics, religion. Is it Mutar or Asa? So the rabbi says, what could I tell you? Yaakov had four wives. Well, what am I going to go tell you? Tell you that it's Asa. Rosh Hashanah. You have Chana and Penina. What am I... Check my connection. I got four people connected over here. So what's
Laser
is on.
He says he doesn't hear you, he doesn't see you.
Okay, 1 second. You're right. You're right. Lablaze, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry about that. Ablaza, thank you for calling in. I'm sorry about that. Yeah, it was my mistake. Yeah. I didn't turn it on. Oh. Okay, I'm really sorry.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I didn't turn it on the video and the audio. I left it on mute. When I turned it on. I did not press the video and the audio. All right, my fault. Sorry about that.
Okay. Razor, you missed about two wives.
Okay.
Later.
Okay, so.
You tell him great, Tommy. You don't bother to tell
him. Okay, so this is the word, the reason why we're discussing this is to bring out the word Begida. Begida is a word, whenever you see the word Begida, it is an exclusive, reserved word that is used in reference to betrayal, bein ish l'ishtoi. Okay, and here we have
Bogdo Yerushalayim, it says.
Bogdo, so maybe that's exactly what it means, and the fact that it's selected that word, it means that Yerushalayim has been, first of all, the relationship between Hashem and Klal Yisrael is a dogma of a man and a woman. What is the mitzvah tanz all about? A mitzvah tanz. Chassidim are very big into a mitzvah tanz. What's it all about? Well, now, unfortunately, it's just a mixed dance. It's all it really is now. I'll kill me for saying that. That's what it's turned into. But it used to be before there was videos and there was this, there was that. A mitzvah tanz was a very holy thing. It was, once upon a time, there were very holy people. And every chosn kala is a dogma, is an example between the relationship of Hashem and Klal Yisrael. And when you go to a wedding and you see the union, the chibur being ish v'ishtoi, this is a dogma between, and it's used as a tool to come close to Hashem. So when you say that Bogdo Yerushalayim, it's the same idea. Harav, Dr. Colonel Cohn, sorry I made a mistake with the technology that you're not able to see us before. Sorry about that. My fault. So Bogdo Yerushalayim being the same idea that Klal Yisrael, the relationship with Hashem, we have been unfaithful to Hashem. Exactly the point. Klal Yisrael has numerous multi-dimensional relationship with Hashem. We say on the Yom Ram, Avinu Malkeinu, on the one hand Hashem is our father, on the other hand Hashem is our master. But Hashem is also our husband. There are multiple dimensions to the relationship. Hashem is our Rebbe. Hashem is our military leader, our commander-in-chief. Okay, by Kriyas Yamsuf, Hashem appeared to be a Gibor Melchama. By Har Sinai, Hashem appeared to be as a Zokeh. Hashem has our relationship. All the different types of examples of relationships in this world can be found between Klal Yisrael and Hashem. We live in the world of social praise and social media. We see the value of relationships. Man and a woman, a child and a father, a servant and a master, a student and a Rebbe. What else is there? What other kind of friends? Chavedim, just a friend, a mentor. Every type of relationship, Hashem says, I'll walk with you in Gan Eden. Right before the Teichecha. V'hisalachti b'seichechem. I'll walk with you. I'll come into Gan Eden, I'll walk around and I'll be buddy-buddy with you. Hashem is a birthday party. I'll come to your birthday party. Okay, I'll walk around with you. What does that mean? I'll be one of your friends. A chaver. So you have in the Torah, every possible relationship that exists in society is found between Klal Yisrael and Hashem. And one of those multiple relationships is husband and wife. We are the Kala and Hashem is the Baal. And when it says Bogdo Yerushalayim, it means in this particular relationship, in this dimension of the expectations between the commitment between a husband and a wife, we have been unfaithful to Hashem in that element. Okay, that's right, Mordechai, that's what I'm trying to bring out.
There is something very interesting here. Bat El, it has hyphen.
Okay.
Nechal by itself.
Okay.
It's not El Nechal. Because there is no El Nechal. It's not Elohim Acherim. Acherim asu otam le'el. So Bat El,
Kamo.
Acherim.
Very good. It's not an El Necha. Don't put those two words together. Yeah. It's Bas El, because there's no such thing as an El Necha. Basel, very good. It's very, very important. That there's no such thing as an El Necha. Unless it says Elohim Acherim. They're Acherim to them. They don't exist. It's make believe. Okay, so this is very possible. We have to change the order of the words. It's like Yachris Hashem l'ish erev yoneh. Hashem will wipe out from a man his descendants that were calling in erev yoneh when Asher Yasena, who does this, or let's say, oh, yeah, me ol Yaakov, and Magish Mincha L'Hashem Tzvokos, who will Hashem wipe out? The person that is guilty of committing this crime of marrying a non-Jewish woman and betraying. This again, there's a very important element of a betrayal to his first wife. We did already the first, let's not continue, we left off the Mitzudas. I believe we are in the middle of the Mitzudas. We're up to
what would we call clothing?
What? Beget. Yeah. So you ask me a question, why is the word Bagda Beget? The answer is because the reason why we need to wear clothing there is because Adam and Chava rebelled against Hashem. The Mepharshim said this, the famous Chavar. A Beget comes from the word Boiget, rebellion.
We rebel. So
eating of the Eitz Hadas. Eating from the Eitz Hadas was an act of rebellion.
There the pasuk says, "Kasnas or."
That was the second set of clothing that cost us a vayalbishet. But Hashem, because we rebelled against Hashem, we brought the Eitz Hadas within us, and then it became necessary to cover our bodies. Before the chait of the Eitz Hadas, it was not necessary for man to cover his body because there was no Eitz Hadas. It's only because of the act of rebellion did it enter. Did we damage ourselves, and now we need indeed clothing to cover our body. On the other hand, the clothing also is by the big tikkun in the Beis Hamikdash lichavoid ulisafaris, honor, which implies that even if Adam Harisha never sinned and he never had a yetzahara, there would still be an element, an inyan, to cover your body, to enhance the beauty of your body with clothing. L'may nafkamina, clothing that you can see through. Clothing, think of it, clothing that you can see through. There are two reasons why we wear clothing. Number one, to cover our nakedness. Number two, l'chavoid ulesefaris, to beautify the body. L'may nafkamina, clothing that share. Right, is that the right word? That you can see right through. So that's not going to solve the problem of nakedness, because you can see. But it does, in fact, give beauty to the body. The Kohen, the Gemara says in Yoma, the Kohen Gadol, on Yom HaKippurim, there's one opinion, he wore the big day lavan was sheer. They used linen that was so fine that the big day lavan, when he went to the Kodesh HaKadosh, and you can see right through the clothing. So I don't say, what's the purpose? You're wearing clothing. The clothing is to cover v'lo yereva cho'erva zavar. You're not supposed to see. It's not supposed to see. So if you can see right through the clothing, what's the purpose of the Kohen Gadol wearing clothing if you can see right through? The Pasuk says the purpose of the Kohen Gadol wearing clothing is not to cover his nakedness. It's to give honor. L'chavoid u'l'sifaris. So in Yom HaKippurim, when the Kohen Gadol went l'fnai v'l'fnim, according to one opinion, there's one story in the Gemara, the clothing that he wore, the linen was so fine, it was sheer. You can see through the clothing. Because either in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's the holiest place in the world, there is no Yetzirah, there is no Taiva, and anyway, no one is seeing him. Anyway, there's no one there to see him. So here, I'm not wearing clothing because I rebelled against you, Hashem. In fact, Adrabah, you don't want to wear clothing from that nature. Ein katego nasa sanegar. If you're coming into the Kodesh HaKadoshim to achieve atonement for Klal Yisrael, you don't want to wear a garment which covers your nakedness, which is a confession. Yeah, Hashem, I ate from the Eitz Hadas. I did an Avera. And I'm proud of it, and here I am wearing the clothing that is the consequence of that Avera. You don't want to remind Hashem in the Kodesh HaKadosh that you've committed an Avera and you need to cover your nakedness. So why wear clothing altogether? Because there's another reason why you wear clothing. L'chavod u'l'sefaris. But how could you have clothing that's l'chavod u'l'sefaris that's not also a reminder that you rebelled against Hashem and you need to cover your nakedness? If the clothing is something that you can see through. The clothing is a material that does not block what's underneath the clothing. And that's exactly what the Kohen Gadol did, at least according to one opinion in the Gemara. A certain type of linen that came from, I think, Egypt, that was extremely fine, and you can see right through the clothing. The two elements of clothing. So he's asking a very good question. So clothing is a beged. Now think about it. What's the beged? It makes a lot of sense. Why was yes? Why dafka this word? If the word begida is a word that is exclusively used in reference to a man and a woman, well, guess what? That's also all about. Who is the Yetzirah from? Unless you're a sick person, okay, a normal healthy person, the clothing is man and woman. A man has a Yetzirah for a woman and a woman for a man. So you have to wear clothing. A person has to be covered, especially when he's in front of the opposite gender. That's what it's for. So the clothing, okay, a men's mikvah, no one's wearing clothing. Okay? It's between a man and a woman. That's why a beged is begida, because begida is a term that refers to man and woman. It's not called another expression. You know, the other words you can use to bring out the point that man was chayte, he ate from the Eitz Hadas. But the consequence of eating from the Eitz Hadas was primarily a busha, a man has from a woman and a woman has from a man. So the word beged is the perfect word to describe that garment. It just proves the point. Okay, let's go further. Madua nivgat ish b'achos. Okay, so this concludes. Now let's go to the mitzvah of it. We're up to pasuk yud aleph in the mitzudoy stavit. Okay, we were in the middle. It's on page 881. 881 pasuk yud aleph. Bagdu Yehuda hina Yehuda also devar begida. And an abomination. An abomination was done. Yisrael be Yosef Yosef b'sech Amo. Ki im hayud nifrad mi Yisrael l'leches la'am acher. If they were separate to go to another nation, v'lokach Hashem nochria lo hayamaiser rakol kach moshu b'sech Amo v'noisei nochria. He's saying here a very powerful thing. What he says, it's like really explosive. What he says here, what the Mizrach Stavit says. Intermarriage is a horrible thing. It's categorically forbidden. In America, intermarriage rate is over 70% for sure. Okay? But intermarriage in Eretz Yisrael is intolerable. This is exponentially worse than intermarriage in Chutz La'aretz. There's no apology, you know, there's no excuse. It is usser, intermarriage. But to go intermarry in Eretz Yisrael, for a Jew to marry a goy in Eretz Yisrael, this is what the pasuk is saying. This is how we understand the pshat in the pasuk. Let's read those words one more time. Bogdi Yehuda, pasuk Yidalg in 81, pasuk Yidalg, Bogdi Yehuda, Hinei, Yehuda Oser Devar Begida. And then he says, Vehato Eva, he's calling it an abomination. It's an abomination in Eretz Yisrael for a Jew to marry a non-Jew. It's a to'eva ne'esesa b'Yisrael. Why are we upping the ante by calling intermarriage an abomination? You don't use the word lightly. Today it's very sad that we abuse words. Everything, all language today is severely abused. All language today is sitting by a psych and a couch and therapy for being abused. Everyone today is a goyin. Everyone's the Gadol Hadar. Everyone is an askan. Everyone, you know, these words years ago were very. They were reserved for very distinguished. The word askan. The word askan today means you're a clown. That's what it means. It means you're a clown. Isn't that what the word askan means? An askan.
It has no meaning anymore.
It means you're a clown.
At least not according to the FJJ.
It used to be, you know, before the war, an askan. Askan means you're oisek, you're busy. You're busy in helping activists. Before the war, it was a very, you don't even realize how distinguished the title was. People who served in the Polish Sejm, okay? They pronounce it the Polish Sejm, like the equivalent of like the parliament. They were representatives of S-E-J-M. Jews. People, they were representatives of the community, the Jewish community. They had to be elected, you know, they were voted. The people they had to do politics. It was very choshev. Rav Meir Shapiro, the one who was the founder of the Daf Yomi, he was probably one of the youngest people to be a representative of Polish Jewry in the Polish Sejm. Okay, he was one of the representatives. My great grandfather was a rep. Someone told me this, I never heard. He told me that his grandfather told him that he voted for him. He helped go to camp. You know, like where do they start the vote? Which state? Where do they start for the presidential election? Where's like the big place to the
New Hampshire? Oh, you mean the primary?
Yeah.
The Iowa caucus.
Like, this is like the Kurdish Kadosh in America, right? This is like, the Iowa caucus, right? So he told me his grandfather used to go and participate in knocking on doors to vote for the Reish Rav, to receive enough votes to be a representative of jury, Polish jury, the Polish Sejm.
Okay? Some of those folks here.
Those people were called Askonim. You wouldn't dare call anyone, a child, giving us flyers to come to Chalamoi, to go to a Chalamoi carnival, an Askonim. Yeah, anyone's an Askonim. It's a joke, an Askonim thing in your class.
The order was the philanthropist.
It's an abuse. The term has become a joke today. Like everything is a joke. Everyone today, you go to a wedding, everyone is Harav Hagoyim. Harav Hagoyim. It's like a joke. Someone even once called me Harav Hagoyim. I couldn't stop laughing. I was really, really, I found it was like, you just out of your mind.
I'll give you another example. The word awesome. Everything is
awesome. Everything is awesome.
One time Rabbi Shulman translated Yamim Noroyim as awesome days, and I told him, everything is awesome today.
There's an abuse of language. So here, one word that is abused as well is the word to'eva, an abomination. The Torah does not use that word lightly. The Torah used that word for Mishkav Zohar, and used that word for something else, I forgot it. Okay, the word to'eva is not a word you just throw out. This is, you know, they didn't show on television my favorite episode, so it's to'eva. Everything, I didn't get for lunch, you know, the steak was not, I ordered the steak should be rare, and they gave it to me a little bit more, so to'eva. The word to'eva is a word that is severely, severely abused. It's a very restricted word. And here the Torah says, intermarriage is a terrible thing. It has destroyed Klal Yisrael. But nowhere does the Torah ever say that intermarriage is a to'eva. It doesn't say that anywhere. In America, it's 70% intermarriage. It doesn't say the Torah anywhere that what's going on in America today is called to'eva.
Yeah, but that's not where the word is used today.
Okay, right. That's the West LA, but the Torah
where
is not
today, where there is an actual context of it.
That's why.
Gay marriage.
Well, that's what the Torah says.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. But today people throw around words without thinking. But the Torah does not use the word to'eva for ordinary intermarriage. Even if the intermarriage is 70%, the Torah is not going to say that in America there's a to'eva because of intermarriage. It's a terrible avera. It's destroying Klal Yisrael. But Hashem does not give the term that what's taking place through intermarriage, men and women, men marrying a non-Jewish woman, the Torah does not say that this is a to'eva. This is a chet, a sin. This is a horrible sin that will destroy Klal Yisrael. But Hashem does not call it a to'eva. Hashem calls it a to'eva when a man and a man get married. When a man and a man get married, they legalize a man and a man. That's called a to'eva in the Torah's terminology. But not when a man marries a non-Jewish woman. Why does the Torah call it a to'eva? I don't know, because maybe the Torah doesn't consider the fact that at least it's natural. It's a man and a woman, and a person has a Yetzer Hara. You can't ignore the fact that people have a Yetzahara. So the Torah is very fair and very reserved in its language in describing Averis. Yet,
the Kiddah is the Torah. The Kiddah of the first wife.
Right, but the Torah doesn't say that either. The Torah doesn't say that the Kiddah of the first wife is a To'eva. Doesn't say that either. The way that the student's dog is picking up something very powerful, he's saying, intermarriage in Chutz La'aretz is a horrible Avera. But intermarriage in Bisrael, the Oretz, that's a to'eva. You do it here? You have the chutzpah. You have the chutzpah to do it here in Yerushalayim, intermarriage? We're not even talking about same gender, man. That's what I'm talking about. We're talking even just what's natural to do that in Yerushalayim. You have a Yetzirah, you have Taiva. The Gemara says, so this is a solution. You go far away and you get dressed up in black clothes and you do whatever you want and don't bother anyone. It's a free world. It's a free world. There's no mandates in the Torah. You want to do Averis, go far away, go do Averis, but don't do it here. Don't do it in the Palpatine Shal Melech. Don't do it in the King's Palace. You do it in the King's Palace? This is a Torah. There's a very powerful Mitzvah David. He says, "V'Yerushalayim, Ritzon Eloimar, V'Oy Chosivu Ashma Lasoyz Kazos V'Yerushalayim." I skipped. 3 lines from the bottom. I skipped. V'Atoeva Nesa B'Yisrael B'Yoyse Yoyshev V'Soich Amoy. Ki Im Hayin Nifrad Mi'Yisrael. If you would separate from the land of Israel, and you would go to Lech Aslamachem V'Lekach Tashamach, you would marry them into marriage in another foreign land. Lo Hayah Maserakol Kach. Can you imagine me? The Haredim would put him in mamish if the Mitzvah Tzavi was living today. I have no doubt in my mind, the entire Mitzvah Tzavi would be censored. How could you say such words? Lo hamasa rakol kach. Right? Eliezer, you agree with me? If the Mitzvah Tzavi were living today, he would say, if you go and you do intermarriage in Chutz La'aretz, lo hamasa rakol kach.
Of course,
that's what he means. But today, just to say the word, just even to express yourself in such language, even though we know what you mean,
yeah.
We're not tolerating today. We live in an extremist society. Okay, but he says, relative to Yerushalayim, lo hayem ma'aser akol kach moshu b'soich amo v'noisei nachoya. When you go to Yerushalayim, you're in the Palatine Shel Melech. When the Palatine Shel Melech, you behave differently. And you know, it's a very simple principle, but unfortunately in the modern world, they don't get this. Like, you know, in Eretz, I'm not complaining about Eretz Yisrael, it's Eretz HaKadosh. But there should be a certain sensitivity. Eretz Yisrael, it's not yet a fully Jewish state. Not yet. It's getting here, it's getting close. There are a lot of chilonim, a lot of people that don't appreciate the values of the Torah, and it's their state, and they do things, and who's to blame? You know, tinnish and mishpah. What do you expect? Look, so they'll allow this, but just because it's permitted in Tel Aviv, and just because it's permitted here and there, it doesn't mean it has to be permitted in the heart of Yerushalayim. Have a little sensitivity. It's permitted, you can do whatever you want. It's a free country. It's modeled after Western, the values of Western culture. Okay, I got it. I really do get it, I think many people get it. And many, many people are tolerant. But you know, in the heart of Yerushalayim, this is the Palatine Shel Melech. Have a little sensitivity. It's not necessary to do certain things in the heart of Yerushalayim.
Like it's about a woman is Madonna under the
chuppah. Under the chuppah. Kala, as I said, the Matan Torah. The Matan Torah, they did the egel 40 days later. That's equivalent to a Kala being mezaneh under the chuppah. That's exactly where they did it. They were mezaneh and Har Sinai. People don't realize that. Where did they make the egel? At Har Sinai. People don't talk about that. The egel was made at Har Sinai. Mamash and Har Sinai. A Shachmin, the same as, what did they offer? This is the worst number of them all. What did they offer the Avodah Zarah, the Egel? The Mon. They took the Mon and they gave the Mon as a Mincha to the Egel. It doesn't get worse than that, right? That's what it says in the Medrash. They took the Mon, Hashem gave you Mon, Lechem and Hashemayim, and you're giving the Mon to the Egel as an offering.
So that goes good according to the theory
of the Torah says, all the Cheshvinos to downplay it are very nice, very good, nice try. No cigar. The bottom line, Chazal, ask you a question. What's the difference between the Kruvim and the Egel? What's the difference? The Kruvim is gold, fashioned in the image of a face of a man and a woman with wings, and the egel is an image of an animal. What is the difference between the kruvim and the egel hazav? Nothing. nothing. Chazal. The only difference is the Kruvim Hashem says you should make Kruvim, and the Ego Hashem says you should not make the Ego. That's the only difference. You cannot legitimize. It's exactly the same. Everything you said is that all of your longness, the Kruvim is not about the Zara. No, Hashem said, I want you to make Kruvim on top of the
Oysan.
What? Kasher Tzivah Oysan. That's the only difference. It all comes down to what did Hashem ask from you? The offer of the man, it's a shocking thing. Okay, so here he's saying that this is called a to'eva. There's a sensitivity in Yerushalayim HaKodesh. There are certain things you don't do. You go to Eretz Yisrael, you're in the hotel. Big, beautiful television. Is that what you came to Yerushalayim for? To watch television? To watch some movies in the hotel in Yerushalayim? When you go to America, you'll watch all the movies you want. In Yerushalayim, you're in Yerushalayim now. Just because the television doesn't mean that when you come home, at night you're tired, you're going to go watch a movie. It's not the place and time. You go to America, you want to watch the movie, because one day, hey, in America, when you go get back home, you go watch movies. Verizon, he always talks about it. He goes on the plane, on the airplane, the airway. It's relatively, what's the big deal? Today, our ancestors, when they went to Eretz Yisrael, can you imagine what it was like to go to Eretz Yisrael, go back 100 years ago, go back even 50 years ago, people had to go by boat, travel 3 months, and over the Atlantic, and the salt, and the seasickness, people, they died. It was incredibly soothing to go to Eretz Yisrael in any shape or form. Today, big deal. Car service takes them to your house, takes them to the airport, you get on the plane, they bring you food, give you some leg room, maybe there's an empty seat somewhere, you can move you around, make you comfortable, and you're there in 12 hours, you have to watch a movie on the plane. You can't control yourself. You have to watch them, so these are always these fun people, you know, they're all watching movies on the plane. Non-kosher movies. Movies that are not, they don't have the values of...
observe that watching on the plane
is
not so much.
Less and less.
Yeah,
people are embarrassed.
Are not. Whatever reason.
They're embarrassed to get caught.
People are not. They
maybe the Verizon had an effect on that. No one is making believe. Listen, everyone has their weaknesses. Everyone has their needs. Okay, there's a time and place for everything. But he says, think about your grandparents. So they went to Eretz Yisrael, your great-grandparents. It was with Mamash, Hashem Shemayim, with Yisurim, with Mesiras Nefesh. So here you're going to Eretz Yisrael, you have tremendous chus, and you're gonna poison your mind. I say poison your mind, but you're putting your mind, you're not putting your mind in the right frame of mind. It takes time, everyone knows. You see a good movie, the next day you think about the movie for the next 2-3 days. Right? Who are we fooling over here? Okay, so you'll see the movie when you get back to America. You don't have to go see it now. There's a time and place for everything. And here he makes that point very clearly, and it's very silly that people really don't understand this. Freedom means everything is the same. Freedom means everything is the same. Whether you're in Tel Aviv, if you can do this in Tel Aviv, you have to be able to do it in front of the Kotel HaMaravi. It's ridiculous. You want to do it in Tel Aviv, do it in Tel Aviv. No one's going to stop you. It's a free country, it's a free world. But have sensitivity that in front of the Kotel HaMaravi, you don't do this. You don't do it in front of the Kotel HaMaravi. And look at the pasuk, he brings Uriah. Intermarriage. It doesn't say intermarriage anywhere in the Torah. It never ever used the word to'eva for intermarriage. The Torah acknowledges people are weak, people have tivus, people do terrible things, they're willing to give up the whole yichus to go marry a non-Jewish woman, Rahman al-Itzlan. But the Torah doesn't call it a to'eva. But if you do the same thing in Yerushalayim, then the Torah calls it a to'eva. Because you have to realize, you have to have a certain sensitivity to where you are, who you are. What you do in shul is not what you do. You know, we do things in shul. So is it proper? Is it not according to shul? Is it safe to go over here? It's not the right place. You want to do certain things, so you go outside. It's partial, but unfortunately, we do not seem to get this. What does it mean that they have profaned the Kodesh Hashem? When I translated this, I struggled. What does it mean they have profaned the Kodesh Hashem? So he says something very powerful. They have profaned themselves. It's very profound what he says. The Klal Yisrael, Yehuda has profaned, Chilel Yehuda, Kodesh Hashem, Asher Ohev. Hashem loves us, and we are sacred to Hashem. We have damaged ourselves. We have damaged ourselves. Boal, V'ata Nischal B'ma She'ohav. Oh, he says something very interesting over here. Nischal B'ma She'ohav. Uvo Bas Ve'am El Nechar. He translates the word Asher Ohev. He translates the word, it seems, not like the Tame HaMikra. When I read the words here, Ki Chil Yehuda, Kodesh Hashem Asher Ohev, period. That is the Tame HaMikra. So the words Asher Ohev, according to the Tame HaMikra, refers back to Hashem. Hashem has selected Klal Yisrael to be Kodesh, and Hashem has expressed his love. Hashem has expressed his love for Klal Yisrael. We, by people who have married non-Jewish women, they have profaned this object which Hashem has designated as holy, and Hashem has expressed his love, namely Klal Yisrael, us. The Mitzudo seems to say that's not correct. He says the word Asher Ohev refers to the non-Jewish woman. This man, he has a love for this non-Jewish woman. He can't control his Yetzirah. He loves her. And he has gone so far in his love to marry her. Uvoal, he married her. Bas El Nechar. This person has done this crime of loving this woman and marrying her. By doing so, he has profaned himself, who is Kodesh. Now, why would the Mitzvah want to break with the rule of the Torah? Very simple, because the word Chilel only can be used in reference to holiness. There's no such thing as Chilel in reference to love. If the Pasuk here is telling us that a man, he has profaned something, you profane something that is holy. There is no such thing as profaning something that you love. You love something, very nice. You love something, so you destroy it, you betray it, you can find a whole long list of words to describe the correct term that you use in connection to the word love. But the word chilel is not the right word. The word to profane only fits like a glove with the word kodesh. But in the word profane is used in reference to Kodesh, holiness. Therefore, when it says in the Pasuk, Ki Chilel Yehuda Kodesh Hashem, stop! Period. Put a period right there, because that the word Chilel cannot be referring to anything other than this. And what is the Kodesh of Hashem? Yourself. How have you profaned? What have you done? What you've done is you have decided to love a non-Jewish woman and marry her. That's how you profane. So he puts the word Asher Ohev on the person. Look at the Mitzvah Stavit. He breaks with the Ta'ameh HaMikra. Ki chilel Yehuda Kodesh HaMitzvah Lama chilel es atzmai. Shohoye Kodesh LaHashem. How did he profane himself? V'yata now nischalel b'ma. How? She'ohev. He loved Uboal Bas, a woman, Me'am, a nation of El Acher. Okay, breaking with the Tame HaMikra. Did the Mitzvah have in front of the Tame HaMikra when he said this Shah in the Pasuk? How sacred, this is a big, big topic. The Tame HaMikra, to what, you find it in Tanakh all the time, in the Nach, and Medim Tzul all the time, with the Mepharshim just totally ignore the Tame HaMikra. And they break up with no apologies. Rashi does it half the time. And the Mitzvah says, oh, Tame HaMikra, yeah, very nice. Don't confuse me with the facts. Obviously, the Tame HaMikra, the Nesoira, is not in the known Chumash. It's a big deal. You don't play around with Tame HaMikra. So we learned last week, we spent the day last week learning about Laney. And you don't do this today, but there's no question about it. Years ago, in certain communities, if you make a mistake in the Trump, you have to repeat the Pasuk. There were communities, that's what they wanted. They were very holy people, and they took Laney very seriously. And they listened to every single word, and if the Baal Kriya made a mistake in the Ta'ameh HaMikra, if you don't lay Kavma V'Azla, if you don't do that, and you say, you do Munach Rivi, No, do it again. Do it again. Repeat the pasuk. You have to lay it, not just the words correctly with the nekudos, but you have to lay the melody, because the melody adds interpretation to the pasuk. And this is the Masorah. This goes back from Sinai. So in Chumash, it's very serious. It's no play games. And in fact, that's one of the very beautiful milas of the Tikkun Simonim. It's a very extremely popular Tikkun. And they present you on the page, on the bottom, many different traditions regarding, and anytime there's a question, what is the Mesorah of the Taneh HaMikra, they have there on the bottom, all the versions. You'll have every so often different traditions. What are the Taneh, and in some communities, they're very, very matter. Like Kotonti. Is it Kotonti? Or is it a Revi'i? Kotonti. There are some communities that are very matter. It has to be a Revi'i. And some know it's an Asla Gerish. And there are certain things that are very... If you don't do Ko'ele on Chol HaMoed Pesach, you're done. You're done. Ko'ele! Okay? So I once lay on Chol HaMoed, it was Shabbos Chol HaMoed, and I was laying. And when we went, no, it was too young. So the first day, I psyched the people up. I tried at least. Like, I got to that part. Whatever, and I went down, I paused, and the Olam took the bait. They took the bait, good. And they all went, Ko'ele, like a whole shul Ko'ele. So the next day, the Rashid came over to me and said to me, don't you dare do that again. Don't psych them up. It's not what you're supposed to do. It's not a joke here. He told me, don't you dare do that. Don't psych them up. So I was very nervous, I got very shaken up. So when I got to, I just like zoomed right through. And the oil was so disappointed. They were so disappointed. I cheated them out of their pleasure. Okay. And Michal, you could appreciate it. Michal Dan is with me sometimes. So you understand, right? He understands the oil on word. He gets it. You have to know your oil. Okay. But in any event, it's really fascinating how he totally ignores the Tami HaMikra over here. Let's try to finish up over here with this pasuk in the Mitzvot David. Pasuk, one more pasuk, which is not in the Mitzvot David, we'll stop with the pasuk in the Mitzvot, page 883. Asher yasen hadav hazos levol bas am el acher. Anyone that does this avera to marry a non-Jewish woman, er ve'oineh me'oh le'yakov, shelo yeh lo bo'oh le'yakov, heim botei midrashois sham lo yeh lo er ve'lo'oyah. This is a chazal. The Mitzvah stuff over here is not going to the Pshutei Shel Mikra, and it's going to the Gemara. The Gemara, in fact, asks us, what does it mean, Erva? And then now I vaguely remember, the Gemara says, Er means a Talmud Chacham. A Talmud Chacham, it's so simple. You say a Shir, you put people to sleep. So who are the people that remain awake during the Shir? the people are the Talmud Chachamim. Look, Rabbi Akiva, could you imagine Rabbi Akiva, he said a Shir, and everyone fell asleep. The Gemara says this. Gave a shir. Rabbi Akiva, if Rabbi Akiva would come out of the grave, the whole Klal Yisrael would come and sit by his toes to hear every word that came out of his mouth. Right? No one would fall asleep, I guarantee you. The whole Klal. But in his time, when he was alive, and he gave a shir, they slept through the shir. It was boring. And he had to wake them up. And he'd tell them, why was Esther a queen on 127 provinces? It's because she was an anicle of Sarah Yimeinu that lived for 127 years. Every second counts. He had to wake them up. This is Rabbi Akiva. This is the person that Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem showed him the future. Okay, science fiction. A time machine. Let me show you what's going to be in the future. And he showed him the shir. You know what he showed him? He showed him the shir when he was sleeping. That's what he showed him. That's not joking. You have to connect the dots. When Hashem showed him, Moshe came to Shemayim. What was Hashem doing? He was tying crowns to the oisiyos of the letters, the tagim of Ksav Ashuris. So Moshe says to Hashem, what's this all about? What are the tagim on top? Shatnes gates. Mazeh. So Hashem said the day is going to come when there's going to be a person. His name is Akiva ben Yosef. He's going to be doireish, tal talim shel halachos on every single tag. So Moish, let me see. Go into the time machine. They had time machines those days, right? Time machines. They went into the time machine and he took into the future. How many years ahead was that? 2,000, 3,000 years? What, how long was it to Rabbi Akiva? Had to be about 1,000 years, something like that, 1,000 years. Whatever it is. Whatever, 1,500 years. And he sits down and he's there in the future. Unbelievable. It's a time machine. There's such a thing called a time machine in the Chazal. And he's sitting there and he sees, he's sitting in the back. And he sees Rabbi Akiva dashing the Tal Talmshos. You have to assume, this Chazal does all the time, that what was the shir? You have to look for another Chazal where it talks about Rabbi Akiva giving the shir. And the only place in the Chazal where it says Rabbi Akiva ever gave a shir was the shir he gave when he all fell asleep. So you have a right to Chazal to this all the time. You have a right to connect the dots that the shir you have to you don't know for sure. But you have a right to assume the shir that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took him to watch was the shir when they were all sleeping. They were sleeping. It was boring. And Rabbi Akiva had to wake them up. So Hashem says, you think you don't listen to your shir? Look, they don't listen to your shir. They sleep by his shir also. And he started to dash in the Tal, and Moshe says, I don't understand one word he's talking about. Doesn't make one, not even one word. So don't be upset. He's not even one. Until they said, Halacha l'Moshe m'Sinai. Halacha l'Moshe m'Sinai. So here, so now they were sleeping. Now, if you're sleeping, you're not going to be a Talmud Chacham. In order to absorb the lessons of the Rebbe, you have to be air. You have to be awake for the Shia. If the Shia is so boring, you fall asleep, that's a problem. That means it doesn't work like that. It's snowsis. It doesn't work. If you go to a Shia, you go to sleep. Cloudy Shol by Matan Torah, they overslept. This is why the Rav Tzadik says this. Rav Tzadik is very powerful. How could it be Matan Torah? They overslept? I mean, there's no excuse for this. There's no excuse for Cloudy Shol going to sleep the morning of oversleeping the Matan Torah. So this is something, we've said this many times in Shul, he says something that's mind-boggling. He says, Nevuah, how does the average person receive prophecy? When he's sleeping. It's a chalayim. That's, you have to be Moshe Rabbeinu to receive Nevuah when you're awake. The Rambam goes through all the Madregas. All the madrigas of Nivu. The highest level of Nivu is to receive Nivu when you're awake. But the average Navi, no way you receive the Nivu in a dream when you're sleeping. Klal Yisrael went to sleep to receive the Torah. They were told that it's going to be together, you're going to be prophets. Hashem's going to speak to you. A prophet, when do prophets receive their prophecy, their transmission? Their transmission takes place in a dream. So they went to sleep to be Mekabel the Torah. Moshe says, no, he came to wake them up. Today you're going to be elevated to a degree of prophecy like me when you're going to receive the Torah Behokitz. It's not that they just stop went to sleep. They thought that, it makes a lot of sense. This is the Tzaddik says this. This says this. So to receive on the highest level, you got to be awake. If you go to sleep, all right, some Levim, they get their prophecy in a dream. Look, the Magid Nisharim, the Beis Yosef, wrote a whole Sefer with the Malach Torah. Okay, a whole Sefer, all of the Chidushim, they ask a lot of questions, they ask a lot of good questions. What in Shemayim, what tzvon do they wear? Rashi Rabbeinu Tam, told them Rashi tzvon. It was a lot of fascinating questions. The Magid Nisharim, what are they wearing? But to be successful, you have to be awake, air. Oineh means talk up. Don't just sit there and share. You got a question, say something. If the Rebbe asks a question, does anyone have an answer? Oineh. So here it says, according to the Gemara, why are we calling the descendants, the children, the heir of the Oineh? It means, Rachman al-Litzlan, that is not going to be from personal intermarries. He's not going to have children who are Talmidei Chachamim. In the context, this man already has children, he has Jewish children. He married a woman and he has 12 children. And now he wants a trophy wife. So he goes and he marries a shiksa as a second wife. So as the pasuk says, you're going to be cursed. You know what the curse is? Your other 12 children, none of them will be Talmidei Chachamim. The model that you set for them by being a roidif after your taiva and betraying your first wife, you know what the result is? That your children will not be talmidei chacham. That's the biggest curse. No chance. They're not going to be awake during the shir, and they're not going to be able to answer, to reply to the words of Torah. Listen to this in the words very quickly. Shlo yelo ba'ol Yaakov ein body midrashas, in the tents of Yaakov. Matoy v'olech Yaakov. Sham lo yelo lo er v'lo oinah. Er hu ha-talmid ha-mo'oirer. That's aroused. Lishol l'raboy sifei koisav. V'oinah hu chocham ha-oinah u'meishiv al she'ilos ha-sveikos. Who gives the answer. And if your children are kohanim, yikodes mizaroi mihamakiv karbonos lefniyamakom. It's not going to work out that your children will merit to serve in the Beis Hamikdash if you set for them such an example by betraying your wife. It's the worst thing possible. Betrayal. Betrayal is the worst, worst thing. Lama yazav esoish. What Lama azavtem esoish Moshe Rabbeinu. What does it say that I've already forgot?
Yisro.
Yisro said to Tzipora, why did you abandon him? He was good to you. He did you a toiva. He did you, he went and he saved you from all of these evil people that abuse you by the well. Lama azavten esoish. Loyalty. That's the real test. That's the real test.
Right.
You know, loyalty. To see who's loyal. You do someone a taiva, even if you don't do them a taiva, if you have a duty, loyalty. It's a very frightening thing. Okay? It's a very frightening thing. I don't have to go elaborate to some of the scenes that you've seen this morning or last night. And the question of, you know, to abandon people. It's a very frightening thing. This principle of that's what the complaint over here is. You have been abandoning your wife by taking a second wife. We're going to take a very short break, and then we're going to start. It's already 3 weeks to Rosh Hashanah, so we're going to.